You're live.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue to order today. It is February 9th, 2021, a little after 3:15 p.m. So we will start by calling the roll and indicating how you are participating.
Senator Findley?
Present by video.
Senator Riley?
Present by video.
Senator Wagner?
Present by video.
Vice Chair Boquist?
Senator Boquist, present by audio.
Madam Chair Burdick?
Present by video. Okay, we will start today by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 149. Chris?
Madam Chair, this is a tax credit that's part of the tax credit review process and is included in the report that Kyle put together, and he's here to just describe the details of the credit.
Absolutely. Excellent. Take it away, Kyle.
Okay. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue. Yes, Senate Bill 149, again, this is one of the 11 tax credits that are up for the standard review process this legislative session. And the bill itself is just simply moving the sunset date, extending that by 6 years. So that's kind of the standard 6-year extension. But the credit in question here is called the Oregon Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association credit, or the OHIGA credit. And just to kind of set up the discussion here, what the credit really is this has to do with insurers. And it relates, or it comes into play when a health or life insurer becomes insolvent. So when an insurer becomes insolvent, the remaining insurers that are not insolvent then have an assessment levied against them, and they basically pick up to cover the cost of that insolvent insurer. So the remaining non-insolvent insurers pick up the cost of that insolvent insurer. And then the credit, what the credit does is it is allows those remaining insurers to then apply for this credit to offset the cost of that assessment for the insolvent insurer. And then this credit is taken over 5 years, so it's taken at 20% in each of the years. So it's 20% each year, or costs are drawn out over 5 years. And the idea behind this is really shift some of that cost that's on those remaining insurers of these assessments, it shifts some of that cost to the general fund through the credit. And so that's the mechanism. In the documentation you have in the meeting materials, there's a 2-pager background. This credit is used pretty sporadically, or pretty rarely, really. The last time we saw much use of this was in the early 2000s. However, in March of 2017, we did have Penn Treaty Network of America went into insolvency. So we are expecting to see a bit of an uptick in this use of this credit in the near coming years in reflection of that most recent insolvency.
And these credits are not transferable, is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair. Yeah, these credits, they're non-transferable, and there's no carry forward. They're not refundable. And that's where for an insurer to benefit from this credit, they're going to need sufficient tax liability to take this credit.
Okay. And if they've got the liability, then it will be over 5 years, 100% reimbursement.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. We'll start with our witness list. We have John Mangan here to testify. Welcome, John.
Well, thank you, Chair Burdick and Vice Chair Boquist and members of the committee. I hope you can hear me okay.
We can hear you.
Great. My name is John Mangan. I'm Regional Vice President for the American Council of Life Insurers, a national trade group of 239 companies that are licensed in Oregon, all of whom are by law members of the Oregon Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association. We're here to speak in strong support of extending the sunset and approving Senate Bill 149. Just a little bit of background, the association was created in the 1980s, and I consider it a successful partnership. And the partnership is between private life and health insurance companies, Oregon's insurance regulators in the DCBS, the Division of Financial Regulation specifically, and you, the legislature, to make sure that Oregon consumers are protected in the rare event of an insurer insolvency. The tax offset is an important component of that partnership. I consider it not a cost shift, but more of a cost sharing agreement that we've entered into to offset some of the costs that companies are going to put forth to protect policy owners of companies that aren't their own companies. In other words, the solvent companies are continuing, and they're going to come in and bail out policy owners for a company that had trouble. All of us have a stake in the success and financial strength of companies in Oregon. None of us want to see an insolvency. I was lucky enough to be chair of the association for 7 years when I was with Standard Insurance Company. And I can tell you that this partnership has worked exactly as it was intended to do. The financial Division of Financial Regulation has developed a very strong set of financial protections that we support. You'll see bills this year probably that even enhance their financial protections. We agree to assess ourselves as companies to cover any financial shortfall of these other companies. We also, by the way, fund the entire cost of the association by assessing ourselves for administration, accounting, legal services, et cetera. And proudly, I'm happy to say that the association over its history has never failed to provide a guaranteed coverage to an Oregon policy owner. In turn, the legislature made this commitment to provide this tax offset, recognizing the financial investment that our companies make. And currently, just so you know, 44 other states have a tax offset. Most have this five-year recoupment offset period that Oregon has as well. Now, the tax offset helps spread the burden of this liability if it does occur. But even as companies take the full offset over 5 years, we estimate that the recoupment is really only about 75% for the remaining companies because of the cost of capital over those 5 years. Essentially, we're loaning the state of Oregon the money up front and recapturing it over time. So we think that partnership works. We think it's fair. It protects our policy owners too, the ones that are with solvent companies who didn't mismanage their company. We don't want to have to raise their rates. And of course, life insurers' rates are guaranteed at the time of sale and are going to be in place for 20 or 30 or 40 years. So we can't go back and adjust pricing or try to recoup any of this. So for those reasons, and I think Mr. Easton said it right, that this is used rarely. We work very hard as an industry and regulators to make sure we never have to use it. We don't want to use it. And in that respect, it's worked, again, as intended, and we hope that you'll continue this partnership by extending the sunset. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Senator Riley, you have a question?
I do. So do all the consumers who are customers of the failed life insurance company get full reimbursement for their what they would have if that company hadn't gone under?
Madam Chair and Senator Riley, the goal of the association is to ensure that every policy owner is held harmless. First of all, before an insolvency even occurs, our companies often step in and either purchase or reinsure the policies of companies that are in financial stress. We do that before an actual liquidation order occurs. If there is an actual insolvency and the department, a Division of Financial Regulation has to step in, there are statutory guaranteed amounts that are covered under the law. And those are the guaranteed amounts that we ensure are provided. And they're fairly ample, high limit guarantees. And again, as I mentioned, I've never seen any indication that our association has ever failed to provide that guarantee.
So the answer is no.
The answer is no. I don't understand.
The question was, do all the people who are insured by that company get everything that they would have gotten if that company did not go insolvent?
Madam Chair, Senator Riley, I would say in most cases, yes. If a company has lost all of its assets in some catastrophe, it is possible, yes, that there are not enough assets to cover 100%, but the guarantees would be covered. So yes, it's possible. I've never seen it happen.
Oh, I have. So that's why the question. And we have in this committee, actually, there was testimony a few years ago from consumers who lost 90% of what they were expecting to get and what they would have gotten had that company not gone insolvent. So I just want to make sure that there's some way that we can maybe make this a little better than it is instead of just continuing it. That's all I had, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Other questions? Okay, thank you. Next, we have John Powell signed up, and we also have in the waiting room T.K. Keene and Greg Lathrop, and I had understood they were going to be here just to answer questions, but I will call on them next if they wish to testify. So, John, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm playing musical camera because I thought when you said next, you were going to call on them next. So I turned myself off. But thank you, Madam Chair and Vice Chairs and Committee. For the record, I am John Powell of two clients that sell a lot of life insurance, Standard and State Farm insurance companies. And Madam Chair and members of the committee, this is not the first time that we've had this sunset extended, and we're hopeful that you will see fit to send it down to the committee of all committees, the Tax Review Committee. This has, as John pointed out, is an agreement that has been on the books, I believe since 1975, because I think I voted to establish it in my first term in the Senate. So I believe it's been here since 1975. The bulwark behind it was really a national agreement between regulators across the country and insurance companies. And the agreement was that the companies would insure up to, and I think the point that Senator Riley was making, up to statutory limits in the statute, which protects not only the first payer, but protects the general fund as well in this program. Up to those limits should an insolvency occur. And as John pointed out, in many cases, other insurers assume the assets and liabilities of the company in a purchase usually worked out in relationship with the regulator in the state of domicile. And that happens probably more frequently than an insolvency occurs. The reason for the general fund being involved is, as John pointed out, to spread the cost of this as broadly as possible. And that was really part of the original agreement. And as John pointed out, in most states, this is the way it works, and it works well. So again, you have to have insurers involved in this because it deals with claims adjudication, and they have that expertise. The regulator would have contact with them at all times during this process and monitor the progress. So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, we just hope that you'll pass this on for the consideration of the Sunset Committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Okay, we will invite T.K. Keene to come forward and just say if you want to testify or just be here for questions.
Yeah, good afternoon, Chair Burdick and Vice Chair Boquist, members of the committee. For the record, my name is T.K. Keene, and I'm the administrator with the Division of Financial Regulation. And we are just here to answer any technical questions or be of help to the committee in any way you would like. We are the solvency regulator for the state's insurance companies.
Okay, and you're accompanied by Mr. Lathrop as well for questions?
Cool. Yes,
exactly. Okay. Next, we will have Bennett Minton from Tax Fairness.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, can you hear me?
We can.
Great. I'm Bennett Minton, and I speak on behalf of Tax Fairness Oregon, which is a network of volunteers who support a rational and equitable tax code. The subject of the bill is not generally in our realm of expertise. That's not unique, but we find ourselves having listened to the House Revenue Committee's hearing on the companion bill last week, HB 2453, and we failed to discern a policy justification for taxpayers to subsidize a fund benefiting the insurance industry and its policyholders. Under questioning last week, LRO, the Department of Business and Consumer Regulation, and ACLI did not identify another example of an industry subsidized by a tax credit that absorbs costs related to a company's failure. Nor did anyone identify the legislature's original policy rationale. We did hear that the tax credit for these companies is analogous to the FDIC. That sounds off. The FDIC is funded by fees charged to covered banks, which may then pass the cost to their customers. We don't provide them with a tax credit for losses absorbed by deposit insurance. The argument for extending the subsidy appears to be that other states also subsidize the cost borne by industry when one of its member companies fails. But LRO's tax credit report reports that the assessments the industry imposes on its members are mandatory. LRO also reports, quote, "Historic use of the credit suggests that about 65% of the credit claimed is used to reduce the tax liability," unquote. Apparently because, quote, "the credit is non-refundable and cannot be carried forward. Thus, the ability to use the credit depends on the particular circumstances of the insurer in each tax year," unquote. In other words, we infer, tax liabilities of the industry are so low that it can't take full advantage of the credit. We also find it incredible that, as Mr. Mangan said, the industry's cost of capital over the 5 years to recoup the credit is 10%. Interest rates have been near zero for a decade. The industry wrote policies worth about $12.9 billion in 2018. As LRO reports, the last substantial use of the credits was in 2000, when companies were able to claim only 3.5 of the 4.5 million in non-refundable credits. The life insurance industry has an effective lobby in Washington, D.C., and I watched them work there for many years. Apparently, it also has one throughout the states. Life insurance has long defended its special place in the tax code. For example, the inside buildup for return on investment in a customer's permanent policy is tax-free, the only financial instrument with that benefit under federal law. This corporate tax offset appears to be a goodie it has won in Salem. We fail to understand why Oregon taxpayers should subsidize the industry, and we urge you to let it sunset. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? See no questions. Next witness is Tom Hott.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Holt here for the Oregon Association of Health Underwriters. They are the professional association of health insurance and health benefits brokers. Some health insurers are members of the Guarantee Association. Oahu sees this tax credit as being part of a very important consumer protection for this industry and for the consumers who have policies through it. Mr. Mangan and staff explained the technicalities of it, but in essence, it's a mechanism that's very efficient in those rare instances when there is a failure for consumers' claims to be covered. Oahu members are on the front lines and get the phone calls when something goes wrong and get yelled at. So we like that there is this mechanism in place. It's much more efficient than any obvious alternative would be to have some kind of a fund that's permanent. We think this is fair. It's successful policy, as Mr. Mangan outlined, over now almost 50 years, and we recommend approval of this bill.
Thank you very much. Are there questions from the committee? Okay, thank you. That concludes our witness list, so I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 149 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 153.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, this is Jamie McGovern for the Legislative Revenue Office working on property taxes. Senate Bill 153 would extend the exemption for port property that is used or held to provide common carrier rail freight service to shippers. And this means that owners of port property may build a rail line or own a rail line, but lease out the operation of that to a third party and still maintain the property tax exemption, whereas normally public property that's leased out to a taxable entity is subject to taxation. And I'll just note that in the current tax expenditure report, nobody is, there's no property currently using this property tax exemption. The most recent property was in the previous version of the tax expenditure report, and that was Coos Bay Port. And this would extend the property tax exemption from ending currently scheduled to sunset in 2023 out to 2029, so another 6-year extension.
Okay, questions from the committee?
Madam Chair, Senator Boquist.
Yeah, please, Senator Boquist.
I'm just curious, do we have a proponent of the extension?
We have nobody signed up, and that's not a very safe thing for proponents to do on these tax credits. Jamie?
Madam Chair, follow-up?
Yes, please.
Does this get referred down to the super committee, too, or does this stay in our bailiwick?
It's our decision whether to refer it down there or not.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there other questions or comments from the committee? All right, thank you. That we have no witnesses signed up, and that concludes the business of our committee today. So, Chris, do we have any other pressing items to talk about?
You do not for today. You've run through your agenda.
All right. Well, thank you, committee, and we are adjourned.